The Bank of England is in a communications tug of war as it tries to prevent more turmoil from pulsing through financial markets. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. In public statements, including from Governor Andrew Bailey overnight, the Bank of England has been strongly steadfast in its assertions it will end its emergency bond buying program this Friday. But behind the scenes, the Financial Times reports central bank officials have given reassurances that they will be flexible on the duration of their accommodation if market volatility flares again. The BOE started its wide-ranging but short-term rescue effort 2 weeks ago to stabilize a dramatic sell-off in the UK bond or gilt market that put UK pension funds at risk of collapse and sparked fears that it could lead to a more widespread financial crisis. Ian Clatcher is a professor of pensions and finance at the University of Leeds Business School. He explains why UK pension funds are at the heart of recent market turbulence.
Liability-driven investments are where a pension fund borrows money to buy more government bonds. And what happens is they post the government bonds they hold as collateral against the loan. As interest rates have gone up because central banks are trying to tackle inflation, then the price of the bonds that were posted as collateral have fallen in value. So that means that the people that you've borrowed from now come along and say, well, you need to give us some more money. So what you end up with is this spiral of you have to post more and more collateral and you end up selling more and more gilts, and it goes in a big loop. And essentially, a couple of weeks ago, the markets froze as a result.
This looming potential crisis seems to have sort of some echoes of the 2008 financial crisis, where we have these very complicated instruments that not everybody understands. And we have the Bank of England that's basically told pension funds that they have 3 days left to fix this problem. Do you think this could end in a similar globally destabilizing event?
I think there are some really strong parallels to 2008. There was lots of people doing the same thing without really thinking about what happens if this goes wrong. Do things collapse in an orderly fashion, or does this become systemic and ripple through? My inkling, but I might be very wrong on this is very localized to the UK just now, because I'm not aware of huge amounts of liability-driven investment being present in other countries. So I would like to think, from a global perspective, that this is going to be a localized problem. The challenge is, with all of these things, risks bubble up in odd places. So while it might start out in liability-driven investment in the UK, some of these interconnected risks are not necessarily visible until things really start to unwind. And we've really seen that with the global financial crisis. So one would hope that it stays within the sort of borders of the UK, more or less, but the potential is still there for some of these unconnected and unobserved things to start to ripple out as it all unwinds.
Ian Clatcher from the University of Leeds Business School, thanks so much for breaking all this down for us.
Thank you very much.
Well, the Bank of England's public resolve to end its emergency measures this week has injected a new bout of uncertainty into the markets this morning. As we check the numbers now, yields on 30-year UK bonds, which move inversely to prices, are rising sharply to 4.9%. That's near the peak that prompted the central bank to intervene in the market. The British pound, meanwhile, is up to $1.11. Elsewhere, European stock markets had been struggling for direction, but benchmarks here in London and in Paris and Frankfurt are now up in the 0.4% to 0.6% range. To France now, where oil workers at refineries and fuel depots voted to continue their strike over a pay dispute, despite the government saying it will use mandatory powers to force them to go back to work. The 3-week-long strike has caused a shortage of fuel supplies across the country. The BBC's Hugh Schofield has more from Paris.
This strike, now in its third week, has shut 6 of France's 7 oil refineries. And with long queues of cars now a regular sight at the pumps, it's become a matter of urgency for the government to get the fuel flowing again. Its latest move is to requisition key staff at a refinery in Normandy, threatening prosecution unless they allow some lorry tankers to load up. But the hardline unions behind the stoppages see this as a threat to their right to strike, and they've toughened their position. They want pay rises to take account of the huge profit being made at the moment by the oil companies.
That's the BBC's Hugh Schofield reporting from the French capital there. Social media giant TikTok is keeping up to 70% of donations given through their app to hundreds of displaced families in Syria. That is according to a BBC World Service investigation, which found that vulnerable families, including dozens of children, are being given access to equipment and accounts by middlemen in order to live stream for hours at a time, in many cases begging for digital gifts that can be converted into real money. The BBC's Hannah Gelbert has more.
Send me gift! Send me gift!
Send me gift!
For life.
There's a new trend on TikTok. Children in camps in Syria begging on live streams for hours at a time. They're asking for virtual gifts that can then be converted into real money. Working with BBC Arabic, we found more than 300 TikTok accounts posting these kinds of videos, with viewers sometimes spending more than $1,000 an hour in total on gifts. The idea behind TikTok gifts is to reward creators for interesting content. These gifts are bought with real money and can cost up to $500. The gifts are converted to a virtual currency that you can withdraw as cash. But how much of that goes to the families? And how much does TikTok take for itself?
You can see there's a pattern. The children seem to be saying the same kind of things. They're asking for likes and gifts. And if you listen closely, sometimes you can hear there's a voice off camera actually telling them what to say.
We asked a local journalist to visit a camp in northwest Syria. Mona lives here with her six daughters. They go on TikTok for 2 or 3 hours at a time, several times a day. She's saving up to pay for medical treatment for her daughter Sharifa, who's blind.
I tell them about my life in the camps and how we lost our home, and about my daughter's situation so that people will support me.
Hamid also lives in the camp and is known as a TikTok middleman. He sold his livestock to buy a phone and now works with 12 different families, setting up their accounts, filming, and withdrawing their earnings. He says most of the gift's value is taken by TikTok before it even reaches his account.
The lion is the biggest gift. It's worth $500. But by the time it reaches the money transfer shop, it's only $155.
TikTok wouldn't tell us how much commission it takes on gifts in the app, so we decided to check for ourselves. We asked local journalist Mohammed to go live from an account in Syria and sent him $106, around £90, in gifts from another account. Then he went to withdraw the money. From the $106 in gifts we donated, TikTok took 73. That's almost 70%. The money transfer shop charged a further 10%. And people like Hamid, who provide the phones, take a cut of what's left. So from those $106, our Syrian family would have just $19. And often the families we spoke to get much, much less. In a statement, TikTok said that this type of content is not allowed on their platform, and they would strengthen their global policies around exploitative begging. A charity that works in the camp told us it could help support these families as an alternative to making money from TikTok live streams. But there are still hundreds of families going live from camps in Syria every day. And the lion's share of the money donated lines the pockets of TikTok itself.
Hannah Gelbert reporting there. You can find more on that story over at bbcnews.com. And in London for now, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate minority leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.